Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Pola sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we have got Bears actually in pads. We've got Cubs finally facing some adversity and not doing well with it. We got White Sox talk, and we have some Bulls talk to talk about. But first,
finally some good Bulls talk.
Yes, finally some good Bulls talk. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. So, sure, the season isn't going on right now because nothing much is going on right now, but that shouldn't stop you from heading on over to icehogs.com, getting yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more, and buy it socially distanced through the internet. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. I'm going to start this off by saying I hate the Cardinals. There's no more to that. I just hate the Cardinals.
Well, I don't like the way the Cubs are playing, that's for sure. I mean, everything was peaches and cream going into Friday, and now all of a sudden we could be facing our fifth straight loss. Depending on what happens tonight, they'll either snap a four-game losing streak or go on a five-game losing streak. And I do not like the way some of this is trending. There are some concerns. I mean, look, you're not going to play 800 ball forever. You're going to lose some games. And, you know, losing Friday night's game, no big deal. Losing Saturday, again, annoying, but you hadn't lost two in a row yet. Then yesterday's game happened, and you're like, okay, this isn't good. You don't want to lose three of four at home to the Brewers and give them life like you've done the past 2 years when you had a chance to bury them. And then the Cubs lose game one today in awful, awful fashion. Once again, you have opportunities to score and you can't. And some of your biggest key players are lost at the plate right now. Just completely lost.
Yeah, it's struggling to score runs, struggling to put the ball into play, struggling to get runners, to score with, you know, a runner on with less than two outs without a long ball. This team lives and dies by the long ball.
You know, it was just so frustrating this weekend. How many times did we see them just swing through 90-mile-an-hour fastballs right down the middle?
Yeah.
And just completely miss them.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And you're seeing, I mean, Chris Bryant is clawing his way back, but still, he's...
Oh, it's ugly.
He's not looking good. He's still batting 190. Rizzo looks more comfortable up there, but still not making the best contact. Javi is, you know, it's
he's
like
a deer in headlights right now.
Yeah. And Contreras struggling. Ian Happ is really the only one that you feel confident when he's going up there. Nico's going through a tough phase right now. It's really a struggle.
And the problem is, this is where some of the flaws get exposed. Because your depth is not very good. Yeah, from a hitting perspective, Jason Kipnis has been great, but Albert Almora is not hitting again. You know, Steven Souza, he had a nice series against the Brewers, but before that, he was really struggling. Josh Fegley just isn't a hitter. He's a backup catcher for defense. He's not a hitter. And then Jason Hayward, who started to heat up, he's got some injury issues, so he's not there. It's just, you know, when your big guys aren't hitting, then there's nobody really to take their place. And that's one thing that 2015, 2016, they had the depth. This team does not have the depth, and it's finally kind of getting exposed.
Yeah, they don't have a lot of depth. And, you know, you saw a couple of guys being hot carry this team along with great starting pitching. The starting pitching is starting to even off a little bit. I mean, not bad, but, you know, Lester finally got tagged up a little bit.
And I didn't think he even pitched that horribly. He just, you know, he made one big mistake, and I know he gave up, what, 5 runs, but, you know, some of the guys that got on base, they weren't hitting the ball hard, and then, you know, he left one big mistake to Keston Hira, and that really cost him. But, you know, again, the Cubs were still in the game, and they still had a chance to win, and they couldn't.
Well, that whole series against the Brewers, they were, you know, were they all one-run games?
Yes.
Yeah, I think they were all. Yeah, they were all.
Yes.
Oh, no, sorry. The first one was Cubs won 4-2, but all the losses were one run. So it's frustrating. They're all one-run losses, and the Cubs just floundered at the end. I mean, the one game they got Hader a little bit, but couldn't put it together to save their life. Oh, here we go.
What's going on?
Oh, my God. Wild pitch with the bases loaded, and Schwarber tried to score from second. So, yeah, that happened.
Yeah, you're way ahead of me, so.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
That's the end of the inning.
Yeah, that's the end of the inning. Schwarber trying to score from second on a wild
I thought
pitch.
The bases were loaded.
The runner from third scored. And then it was 2 outs, and then Schwarber tried to score from all the way from second, and he got thrown out at home.
Well, at least they got a run.
They got a run, yeah.
They got a run.
So there's that. So anyway, yeah, the Cubs really just floundering right now, and it sucks because they were on such a streak, and then, it just sort of came crashing to a halt, you know. They had those games canceled with the Cardinals, ended up going to Cleveland and looking very good against Cleveland, a team that has beat up on the White Sox.
Yeah, they
good.
Looked great in Cleveland.
You know, it was funny because, you know, I didn't catch the whole games of all of them. I was watching bits and pieces, and there was times I was watching. I was like, oh, man, this is a little bit of a struggle. And I'd run an errand or something or go to, you know, do some work and look up and I'm like, wait a minute, they just scored a ton of runs. So it was but it was nice to see because we talked about it a little bit, but it's like an indirect measuring stick because the White Sox have, you know, the struggle a little bit against the Indians. So it was kind of gauging indirectly how the Cubs will fare against the White Sox. And I know it's all matchups and doesn't really mean anything, but if you can beat the team that beats the team, it looks good for you. So the Cubs dominated the Indians, and then you felt good coming into this Brewers series because the Brewers have been scuttling. Mm-hmm. You win that first one and then just the wagon wheels fall off.
Yeah, it was frustrating. And what made that so frustrating was the fact that it looked so reminiscent of how the Cubs kept the Brewers alive the last 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's true.
I mean, one-run losses, frustrating losses, and just like last year, win the first game, lose the rest.
Yeah, and you know,
it's just
and what's crazy is, you know, you got to Woodruff in that first loss, and
you did,
and then you just flamed out after that. Like you couldn't hit their middle relief. I mean, he only pitched 4 1/3. You feel if you get 3 runs off of him in 4 1/3, you should feel pretty good about winning that game. And you know, and then you got the Yelich effect with the guy has no hits unless they're home runs. Like, it's unreal looking at that guy's numbers. Like, how many of his hits are home runs?
Yeah, a lot of them. Like, I think it makes up going to that series, it made up quite a bit.
Yeah, so it's frustrating. Is you get to Woodruff, who's a guy that is a pretty good pitcher, and then you can't score otherwise. And your bullpen actually pitched pretty well, but you had actually a nice outing from Kimbrel.
Yeah, 2 nice outings from Kimbrel this weekend. And, I hope that's encouraging, but, I still don't feel comfortable them having a lead and putting him out there just yet. But you hope those 2 good outings could actually be a sign of good things to come, because you saw the velocity up a little bit. You saw the location was better, and he was actually getting swings and misses.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it, it's tough to figure out what is going on. I've heard everything from, nagging injuries to it being in his head to just age-related drop in velocity to
all the above,
mechanical issues to tipping his pitches. And I'm sure there's an element to all of those. And I honestly think tipping pitches, it's starting to think that was probably in play, because there's some pitches that just nobody was swinging at, and
the curveball, no one was biting.
So it's Major League Baseball. There's any curveball is going to, even if it's not a plus curveball, any sort of major league level curveball is going to get some doofus to swing at it, and nobody swung at his.
No, literally nobody.
It's just like they knew it was coming, and they knew it wasn't going to be a first strike, so just let it go. And his command, he had some command issues. I agree with you. I'm not confident that we're going to see good Craig Kimbrel the rest of the way, but it's encouraging that we at least had some outings where he was capable. And otherwise, he's just a wasted roster spot.
Yeah, I mean, I hope if he could keep developing, like, in the right direction as we go along the season, maybe towards the end you could trust him more. I'm just saying I wouldn't trust him right now. I wouldn't, after 2 outings, say, all right, let's put him in a safe situation. I would really like to see him get a few more good outings, non-safe situation before I get there. I just wouldn't do it based off 2. Maybe he could get there. I hope, but I'm not going to go. I'm not going to go there just yet.
Yeah, and it would be nice to see what he's like in like a middle relief role, where even if it's a close game, to see in a non-high leverage situation what he can do, and go from there. I think you feel confident with. I mean, you saw some good things from Tapera, and obviously a ding on Jeffress, but you've seen some good things from Jeffress. So you feel like you have better options at closer role right now, and if you could just get Kimbrel to be a 5th-6th inning guy for the time being until you feel more confident. And you could string together a few good outings in a row.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you just kind of got to go with the hot hand right now in terms of closer. Like you said, Jeremy Jeffress has overall been very, very good, and he was throwing some pretty nasty stuff in Cleveland. The velocity was actually looking better again, because early on, while Jeffress was getting outs, the velocity wasn't necessarily there, where it started to come back a little bit in Cleveland. So, continues to get outs for the most part. So, yeah, I think he's probably the guy. He's the more experienced guy, because Rowan Wick has the more closer stuff, but he also doesn't have nearly as much experience as Jeremy Jeffress does. So it's probably the route I'd go for now. You know, the bullpen, I don't want to say the bullpen's fixed by any means, but I feel like the fact that they've been able to kind of shuffle things around a little bit in the bullpen can at least make it not as bad. That makes sense.
Agreed. They need to stabilize some things, and the bullpen is a little more stabilized than it was very early on in the season. You know where it was like a train wreck. You're figuring out who the guys are that you have and what their capabilities are. Who's got David Ross's confidence? Now if it's finding where Craig Kimbrell's spot is and what he's capable of, and if he does come back and give you a decent year. I mean, I don't think any of us expect a good year, but if he gives you an okay year, you sort of have to give some credit to David Ross, because I think the rest of Cubs fandom was ready to choke him out and launch him to the moon.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of angst there. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think 99.999% of Cubs fans were ready to just murder him.
Yeah.
Maybe not murder, but they were just very, very unhappy with him.
And they were going to give him a good fish shake.
Yeah.
They
were a good finger wag.
Oh, finger wag. Very bad. Like from Seinfeld. You're very, very bad man.
You're a very, very bad man, Craig Kimbrell. You're a very, very bad pitcher, Craig Kimbrell. Yeah, so we're at the point where we all knew the Cubs would get to this point where they lost a few in a row, and how do they respond to that? And I think right now in this game two of a doubleheader, is really going to, I think, say something about the Cubs. Are they a real deal contender, or are they a team that just hit an early stride and are going to level out?
Well, I hope it's the first one, because I don't want to see it be the second one. Here's the thing. You can't maintain success when your big guys continue to struggle. Early on, Wilson Contreras was probably their most productive hitter. He has struggled pretty much as bad as Javi and Bryant have the past few weeks. And that's not a recipe for success. You need to get all those guys going again. Ian Happ has been far and away their best hitter. I think right after that, you can put in Anthony Rizzo. And I said this before, but Jason Hayward was really starting to swing it. And then he got hurt. And then you have Jason Kipnis doing some good things. So, but, you know, we said it all year. Oh, the production's coming from the bottom of the order. Well, you can't keep relying on that. Your big guys are going to have to step up eventually.
I mean, honestly, we're all looking at you, Chris Bryant. You know,
is the leadoff spot just cursed ever since Dexter Fowler left? Like, was there just a voodoo curse put upon the spot that is first? Well, it doesn't apply to Anthony Rizzo, but I think Anthony Rizzo broke the curse of the Billy Goat, so he could break any curse. But it seems like everyone else that goes in there just struggles.
It's it's the ghost of Dexter Fowler. He's haunting, and sure, he's not dead.
Who hit a home run today against the Cubs, no less.
Wind aided. Asterisk.
Okay, meatball.
I'm not conceding that one. I've got that one contested. But I mean, since he's left, there's been no leadoff hitter, and it's been years now. It's been multiple years. They can't figure out that leadoff spot.
You know what? When it gets bad, just do what was done before. Just put Anthony Rizzo there. He's the only one that can do it. I don't know what else to do. And hey, Jason Hayward looks like he's back in the lineup.
Yeah, he's up to bat now.
Yep. That's good. You didn't want him to be down for too long.
No. I mean, I read that it was out a few days just as precautionary rather than, you know, truly injured. Oh my God, that was a bad swing.
Really bad swings there by Hap too. And we were just talking about how good he's been, but oh well.
Yeah, so it's just been really frustrating. It's, you know, it starts with Chris Bryant is that it's just been not good. Not good. And this is a guy that, you know, you have to make a decision on spending a lot of money on him. And frankly, I know you're going to point to his career numbers, but, he hasn't been the same guy.
Yeah, you know, it's a weird situation because the thing is looming over Bryant. Everybody knows it. He tries to brush it off, but it's looming. It's there. And this is a very weird year. He's got a newborn son. This is a very difficult time right now. You know, with COVID, they've been off for a number of months and things are kind of out of whack. And, you know, Bryant isn't the only superstar right now that's struggling. Cody Bellinger has struggled. We mentioned Christian Yelich. So, you know, I don't know if this is just one of these weird things, but, you know, one thing is kind of certain to me. I mean, I don't want to say he's been a very dang good ball player, but that perennial MVP that we were expecting, it just hasn't been quite to the level of 2016. And, you know, maybe it's unfair, to expect exactly that. But we were kind of hoping that we'd get consistently around that. And, I mean, he was pretty good in 2017. The home runs were down, but the overall numbers were still very good. Last year, the numbers were not, at that level, but still all-star caliber. So, yeah, long story short, there's a lot of decisions to be made here.
Yeah, and it's he's got to come out of this slump big time if the Cubs are going to make some noise. You had a fairly slow start with Anthony Rizzo.
At least he's walking though. He's hitting home runs, but
Javi Baez he's Javi Baez and he is a streaky hitter. High highs, low lows.
I just don't think we've ever seen him struggle like this since his rookie year.
Yeah, there's just been some really bad swings, and
I think it's in his head now too.
And it's probable. I mean, that guy. Hopefully, it's one of those things. Is he gets something big, the confidence comes back, and he just turns it around. Because he's a big time player. He likes the spotlight. So you hope that, a big game against the Cardinals can turn this around. Big game against the Cardinals. Come on.
That strike one call to Jason Kipnis. Did you see that?
I did. And I was looking up Chris Bryant's stats on FanGraphs.
It was not even close. And it was called a strike. I'm just saying it was bad.
You know, it's funny, these the marquee network with the box full time up there, you know, you see some of these.
Oh, Kipnis gives it a ride, but not quite. Well, wow, that looked like it was going to go way further off the bat.
Okay. Well, I don't know if you saw they did the computer modeled wind pattern, and it has it blowing in, and you know, there's like a wind gust blowing back towards center field and another one that's blowing out and towards right. So if it depends on where it gets hit. If it gets hit, you know, during that one gust, it's just going to knock it down and blow it towards center. And if it gets in the other gust, it's going to take it out. So it's that tricky Wrigley Field wind.
Yep.
That
we love so much.
I know it's funny, you know, to see it actually in a computer model where, you know, you grow up and you're like, oh, the wind is blowing this way. And you're like, oh, no. Wrigley Field, the wind blows six different directions.
Yeah, and that model is showing it, that it's more than just the flags. You know, you kind of underestimate that. You're like, well, The flags show center field, but the other fields are a little differently.
Yeah, because it's up where the flags are could be. That's where that is where the wind is blowing. But you go down because those winds swirl and they come different directions and you get different gusts and it's crazy town.
Mm-hmm.
But where we're at with the Cubs, it's, you know, we got the series here against the Cardinals and trying to, you know, a couple doubleheaders in there to make up for those lost games. And then you got the weekend series with the White Sox, which is, my hope was that the Cubs would be able to smash through the Brewers and the Cardinals. And then no matter what happened with the White Sox, they'd still be have a great record.
Mm-hmm. But
it's starting to come now where, you know, sure, they're still a very good team and with a good record, but they've come way back down to earth because there's so few games that, you know, you can pad a lead with.
Yeah, and you know the White Sox are going to want to crush the Cubs. They do like to bring their A game against us. Some teams you look at the crosstown numbers the past several years, and they're actually pretty even in terms of wins and losses between the two, but the White Sox do play the Cubs very hard. Even in the years where they're not contending, they always gave the Cubs a good fight, and I'll give them that. And I don't know. I'm sure we'll talk about the White Sox in a minute, but, you know, they've been up and down, and, you know, we could see a slumping White Sox team, or we could see a White Sox team that's hitting four home runs in a row.
Yeah, and which we did. Four in a row. Back to back to back to back.
Mm-hmm.
We could shift over to the White Sox.
Why not?
This has been another up and down week. Starts off with a loss to Detroit, who is they're still not a good team. And then you come back, and then you split against the Cardinals. Like, you just, this team just can't find any sort of consistency in their play.
Yeah, you know, it's a young team and they're making a lot of adjustments. There's going to be a lot of growing pains. I think a lot of the frustration from Sox fans comes from the way Ricky manages the team. And I think that, you know, Dallas Keuchel calling them out was very interesting the other week, talking about how some guys are just going through the motions. And, you know, when you're a veteran and you see young guys going through that kind of thing, it's kind of your job to speak up. And, you know, I don't think there's any reason to worry about the White Sox in the long run. I get there is some frustration, but, you know, again, it's a young team. They're trying to get things together. If there is one thing to kind of worry about, I think the starting pitching is it's thin right now. It's thinner, and I think it goes to show that they need to shop for another starter or two this offseason.
Well, I guess Dane Dunning is going to make his debut.
Well, that could be something.
We'll see. I mean, it's tough to rely on a guy making his debut to help boost you. The Cubs are doing so right now with Tyson Miller, who is looking okay. I mean, it's only the second inning.
Well, I just walked Carpenter after he had him 0-2 too.
That was my fault.
Nice going.
But yeah, I mean, the White Sox just really struggling to find consistency. Some of the pitching, they've gone on record. I don't think they're going to go after any pitching unless it makes sense long term. And I guess that makes sense because do you want to get a rental player in a 60 game season?
Not this year, no. I think it's something that they have to look at. And the Cubs are losing.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's something I think you have to look at. I'm not watching this anymore. And it's something you have to look at in the offseason. I mean, Rick Hahn even said that they're probably not going to do much shopping this year during the season. And I'm not surprised.
Yeah, you don't. I mean, the Cubs made a lot of moves with via trade and gave up a lot of good prospects to get guys. And, you know, you can argue whether or not they make sense, and they got a World Series out of it. So it sort of negates a lot of the arguments against. But the White Sox, you know, do you want to give up a lot of prospects there to try to bring in a rental player? You know, that's the question you got to ask yourself. Or do you ride this out and see how this season plays out with what you have, and then, you know, try to spend a little money in free agency where you're not giving up any of these prospects?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question. And, you know, I
think you're going to have to. You're down the road, not this year, but down the road, you're going to have to give up some prospects for major league talent.
Probably, but, you know, you've got to see who's a better sense of who you think is going to be part of your team long term, and have a good idea of who you're letting go, because the last thing you want to do is make a move with a guy that you don't know exactly where you think he's going to be. I mean, that's the beauty of when you trade somebody, is you should have a good enough look at them over a long period of time to make your decision of, well, we feel confident that this is who he's going to be, and we feel comfortable giving that up. You know, the White Sox fans will ever forever bring up the Tatis trade, and they gave him up and never got a good look at him, and, you know, he's looking real good.
Yeah, but yeah, to be fair, James Shields wasn't good when they traded for him, and everybody knew it. It was the biggest desperation move that anyone ever saw.
And, you know, what the White Sox do have going for them is something that the Cubs really don't, is they've got a lot of hitters that are, you know, able to put things together, and you're not relying on one guy to carry you. Is day in and day out, different guys are coming up big, you know, between Tim Anderson and Eloy Jimenez and Jose Abreu and Luis Robert. You know, you've got a lot of guys that are stepping up and showing big power, and you know, bringing the big bats, and you know, you're not relying on the bottom of your order or one guy. I mean, yesterday, obviously, you got a home run from Jimenez, Abreu, Grandal, Moncada. And you're seeing it in there, you know, on your team, is you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, at least 4 guys that are well above average in their OPS currently. And that's, and then you've got a bunch of other guys that are, you know, right there. So, you're not relying on one guy. You're getting a true team effort. You know, the construction of this team, although you're not getting the full results. And I think that's a lot to do with starting pitching. The hitting wise, you've got a really complete team here.
Well, they just got to keep growing. You know, that's what I say. You're seeing a lot of promise now, and get some of the bumps out of the way. You know, they're going to be there. You know, it's funny because the Sox will go on this really nice streak, and then they'll go on a really rough streak. But I guess that's just the nature of a young team.
And, you know, the frustrating part is you were really relying on Lucas Giolito to have a year like he did last year for you. And I think if you had obviously you're not expecting a year like the first half of last season, but even if you got the second half, where it came back down to earth a little bit, if you got that effort and then what you expected from Dallas Keuchel, you're going to be a much better team. And Lucas Giolito has had some big struggles this year. I mean, you look at his numbers, he's got a almost 5 ERA And this is a big enough sample size so far where you go, you know, what's going wrong with Lucas Giolito this year?
In my opinion, maybe I'm wrong in the long run, but I just look at Lucas Giolito. I see a 2 or 3 starter. I don't see an ace. I think far and away right now, their best starter is Dallas Keuchel. He's been great.
Yeah, he really has. And you know, you just got to figure out somebody else. I mean, Gonzalez is another guy you were planning to lean on, you know, because with a questionable back end of the rotation, and he's got almost a 6 ERA. It's been tough. You know, Dallas Keuchel is looking good with a 3 ERA. Gave you another good outing yesterday against the Cardinals. It's just been brutal other than Keuchel. You know, you got one real solid outing from Lucas Giolito. But other than that, it has just been a crapshoot of what this team is able to give you. And luckily, they're scoring a metric poop ton of runs that they've been able to stay in a lot of these games. And I don't know where the help comes. Is maybe Dane Dunning comes up and does help you. Maybe Dylan Cease, you know, comes around. I don't know.
Yeah,
And I don't know where in a shortened season like this, with everybody screaming for more pitching help, how you find this help other than pulling it up from the minors or reaching down to the scrap heaps.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to really think about getting anything big now. I think they're going to ride with what they have right now. I think Dylan Cease can obviously keep getting better. I mean, the box score, his outing, the last few outings have been okay. The walks are a little, those need some work. The command overall, but, you know, if you're getting outs, you're getting outs. I think you need a bigger sample size to see how he can develop, obviously. But we'll see what happens with Carlos Rodon. You know, that's a big X factor right now. Gio Gonzalez is kind of just a temporary fill-in veteran type right now. So, yeah, I think that's my biggest concern with them, because I think their bullpen is pretty good. The back end of their bullpen, Alex Colome has been very good. The former Cubs Steve Cishek has not been very good, but Joe Madden pretty much killed him, let's face it. But, you know, overall, the bullpen has done a pretty good job there, and you just want a more consistent offense. You don't like to see them when they go in big, massive slumps, and you hope that your starting rotation can at least do a decent job. Again, there's potential in the rotation, but there's injuries and there's uncertainties.
And, you know, we saw who the Indians are. I don't think they're a for real team. So the White Sox have a real opportunity to be able to catch them. The Twins, I guess I was wrong. They look pretty darn good, but to get that second place in the division, I think that's a realistic thing. And the White Sox just need to be able to string a couple of good starts in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ERA wise, Dylan Cease looks all right. It's just that whip is just way too high.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be able to not give up hits and walks. You know, even if you're getting out of innings, you need to be able to, you know, get out of innings with much less pitches and with, you know, much more cleanly. You know, because even if you have a good ERA, you keep up a high whip like that, and it's going to come back and bite you in the ass.
Yeah, you don't want that to keep trending. You can't get away with it all the time. You want to find some more consistency with your pitching. You don't want to be walking guys left and right. You can't walk 4 or 5 guys a game and get away with it every time. I think, Like, his one start against the Indians, he walked a ton of guys, but he didn't give up any runs. And that's just, you don't want to keep that trend up. You want to improve on the command. And I think he's got the stuff to do it. So, you know, hopefully for him, that can develop in a better direction.
Yeah.
And again, he doesn't have that much MLB time under his belt.
Yeah. And I'm not talking bad about, you know, him as a pitcher, period. I'm talking about him being a pitcher on this rotation this year, and they need more from him. And man, what a bad at bat by Chris Bryant. Oof. Oof. But I want to move on to talk about the Bulls.
Yes.
We finally have something good to talk about. So the other day, out of the blue, I mean, I'm sure this was not out of the blue within the organization, but I think as far as the fandom goes, out of the blue, we get notice that Jim Boylan has been let go and terminated as head coach of the Chicago Bulls, and there was much rejoicing.
Well, there was fear among the fan base that he was going to be sticking around, and I don't know if that was just journalists trying to stir the pot. I don't know if it was actually under consideration. I don't know if it was going to be a thing and then they saw the backlash and decided not. That's kind of the more fantasy way, and I'm not sure I believe it, but you know, the change had to happen. It absolutely had to happen. The players were having mutinies. The players were annoyed. They didn't respect him. It was bad. It was ugly. And, you know, I don't take pleasure in people losing their jobs, but if you look at both sides, for the Bulls, it had to happen, as I just said. For Jim Boylan, he's made plenty of money. He's been an assistant for so long in the NBA. He'll land another job somewhere. He'll be fine. I guarantee you, he'll be fine. But this took too long, in my opinion. I'm not going to harp on it too much now because the move's been made. It's over with. But I don't understand what you needed to evaluate. What did you need to evaluate? There wasn't anything to evaluate. It might just be just the way Karnisovas operates. And you know what? If that's the way he operates and it ends up, you know, working well with that same kind of mentality with everything, then great. It felt like it was too long, but I'm not going to worry about it now.
You know, and then you start hearing these stories about what a toxic guy he was behind the scenes. And it's just, it needed to happen. I just, you know, we talked about the financials of it, that it made sense financially. It was not a big financial hit. I mean, to you and I, yes, but to a multi-billion dollar franchise, no. You're trying to, I mean, you know, there's so many reasons why it needed to be done. Is you have a new head of basketball, a new GM. You're trying to right this ship, and it's already a tough sled to turn around an NBA franchise in, you know, the way the league is with superstar driven. It's almost like trying to turn around an oil tanker in a bathtub, and it's a tough sled. And to do so being handcuffed with a really bad head coach, that's just a difficult constraint to put on your new head of basketball operations. You want to be able to, for him and his team to bring in somebody they want. You just sort of lose a year otherwise. And also you have to come to decisions on your players, like what you're planning to do. Are you going to extend Wendell Carter Jr.? Are you going to extend Lauri Markkanen? Are you going to keep Zach LaVine? You know, what are these guys, where do you see these guys fitting on this team? And it's, you know, you don't get a good picture with Jim Boylan as your head coach. And he talked about how he can be flexible and how he can adapt. And do you want a guy that can, that, you know, couldn't adapt when he had the opportunity, was suddenly going to magically do it when to just not get fired. That's just not a good situation to be in. You want to put this team in the place to be able to fully evaluate the players before they make decisions on signing them to big money or moving on from them and trading them.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of decisions to make in the future. Now, Karnisovas on the radio today, and again, this could just be radio fluff, but he says he really likes the core. And I think one of the things he's going to consider the most when it comes to hiring the next guy is how they can manage this core. I think he's looking for the right system, because Jim Boylan's system was not the right system for these guys, especially like Lauri Markkanen. Yeah, really, you know, not the right system.
The system wasn't right. The personality wasn't right.
Right.
It wasn't a good fit at all. It was not a good fit.
No.
And you know, fit is a big thing. You know, you look at sometimes like there's, and it, personalities don't mean, you know, you can't tell if somebody's going to be a good manager or coach or a bad manager or coach based on their personality, because you've had, NBA wise or NFL wise, is you look at Bill Belichick. He's a gruff jerk that a lot of people don't like playing for, but he's a winner. You've had guys that are much nicer and more fun to be around, that are much more personable, and they're winners too, like a Sean Payton. So it's, you know, you look at, just because he was a kind of a toxic personality behind the scenes doesn't necessarily mean that he was good or bad, but the results that you saw on the court and the strange decisions he made and the fact that he had people out of position and not utilizing the talents of some of your players, it's just, none of it made sense. And it was, so you got a bad personality match, toxic personality traits, and a bad coach. And, you know, all of that just adds up to, why in the world would you keep him? You still there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Edit that out.
Now it's who do you bring in as your new head coach?
Well, I know there are some options out there. Some people were talking about what they could go after, and it's a matter of, what are we going to be looking at in terms of who's available?
You know, the world is their oyster right now with coaches. And I know it's funny. A lot of people were talking about how, since the Bulls didn't move on firing them so fast, that they're going to lose out on options. And I don't think the Bulls lost any options that they were seriously interested in.
No, I don't think so either.
I mean, you're not going to go and rehire a coach that you just fired a couple years ago. So
no. There are several guys that are being talked about. None of them, I don't think, are in danger of not taking the Bulls job because they waited on Boylan, even though I said I think they waited too long, but I don't think it's going to affect this.
Yeah, and I'm on a sports betting site, and they've got a lot of different names, who are, and their odds of becoming the Bulls' next head coach, and the one who is the best odds is Kenny Atkinson.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
And so, you know, former player, he's a current coach. He was the Nets coach. He's a name that they have the highest odds of hiring him, you know, based on sports betting. You know, who knows what's actually happening inside the front office. The next name up is Wes Unseld Jr., who is an assistant coach with the Nuggets. So AK has a good knowledge of him and what he's able to do, which is nice. I like that, having personal dealings. You know, it's even if somebody has a good resume, you never know what the working relationship is going to be like, because just because somebody's, I mean, it could be a good coach and a good general manager, but if they it's like mix like oil and water, you know, you don't always get the best result. You need to have that, you know, that, you know, working relationship that works well.
Yeah, I saw some very interesting suggestions, and I don't think they're going to go this route. Somebody suggested Mike D'Antoni, but I do not see that at all.
There's no chance that's happening.
No.
The next one is Adrian Griffin, who's a he's a former player, and he's an assistant coach with the Raptors. Who else is on this list? Darvin Ham, who is another retired player and is an assistant coach with the Bucks. And the cool name that's on there, and I hope this person gets consideration, is it's Becky Hammon, who is an assistant coach with the Spurs.
Yeah, there was talk about how the Bulls should at least give her a call, and I think they should.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's been a great organization. She's done a fantastic job at San Antonio. I would be interested in at least hearing, you know, what she would have to say. And I would
sure.
I would like for her to be interviewed at least. I think that's a huge. That would be a huge thing.
What I wonder is, will AK go outside the box on this? Because he's a very smart man. He's a great evaluator of talent. And I feel like there is the possibility that he can find somebody somewhere that we weren't expecting.
I mean, that's a possibility. He goes outside the box. I don't think it's going to be too far outside the box, though. I think he's going to want somebody that has played basketball at a high level as a player.
Sure.
I think he's going to want somebody that is on the younger side. Maybe not super young, but on the younger side. And it's going to have to be somebody that fits well within the organization. So I think between it's going to be somebody that has worked under AK at some point, or it's going to be somebody that Mark Eversley has worked with. And I think that's where you're going to see. I don't think they're going to pluck anybody where they have no working relationship with. Because I think they really want to bring in somebody that there's going to be a lot of synergy. You know, they talked about how they want somebody that, you know, everybody's got their skill set and, you know, nobody's perfect in everything. So finding people that have strengths where you have weaknesses to help you out. And you know, so I think they're going to find somebody that's... you know, they've definitely worked with. It may not be the sexiest name. It may not be, you know, who we all thought. But I think it's going to be somebody that they've worked with or have really good familiarity with.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I think that makes the most sense.
So that's where I see them going. But it's exciting, you know, that we're going to have a new head coach with a new front office, and it's starting to make you feel like, all right, maybe they are serious about actually winning basketball games.
Well, I think it sends a message finally that they're ready to move forward with a new modern way of thinking. and not a Jim Boylan way of thinking. Boy, I tell you, if they would have retained Jim Boylan, I think that would have been just such a massive hit for this fan base, and a hit in a bad way.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it would have taken such a toll.
That would have been awful. Here's another big name. Name that is being thrown around is the assistant coach for the 76ers.
Definitely made him Tiger. Udoka. Right? I mean,
what's up, guys?
Oh my God.
Yeah, I've heard his name thrown around too, and there's obviously the Eversley connection right there.
And that makes a lot of sense because, like I said, they're gonna bring in somebody that they have some sort of working relationship with because they want to hit the ground running, and they don't want this to be a feeling out thing. And you know, the last thing you want is, you know, most head coaches that worked under John Paxson, there was all kinds of personality conflicts.
Oh yeah, to say the least.
Like Tibbs, and you know, there's a bad one there. You know, Boylan worked out well for some reason.
Because he was a puppet. I don't know. He could be, you know. John Paxson needs to, if he's going to be part of the Bulls organization, he really needs to be just thrown in a closet somewhere during games and big decisions. You know, someone's got to be like, hey, could you file those reports that I wanted and show them in one of the broom closets and lock him in there until whatever big decisions are made are over.
It's like he's a special assistant to the team owners, parentheses. It's kind of like the difference between being the assistant regional manager and the assistant to the regional manager.
Nah.
He's like the Dwight Schrute.
Yeah, he's muting out with whiteout to the GM or whatever with whiteout on his business cards.
And he comes in, and they're like, "What are you doing here, Pax?" He's like, "I'm the special assistant," and like to the owner. He's like, "Same thing." No, it's not. No, it's not. Get out of here.
Pretty much.
So I'm hoping that there's a quick decision. They don't make this linger too long. I mean, partly because I want to see what the Bulls can do with, you know, getting a jump start on figuring out what kind of offense they're going to run, how these players are going to fit. Are they going to make some moves? You know, is Zach LaVine really on the market? And I think you need to figure out your coaching staff before you can even consider those types of moves.
No, you don't want to just go in there and jump and make moves before you really have the whole scheme figured out, because if you get a new coaching scheme and it works with a lot of these core players that are still very young and have potential, you don't want to just get rid of that.
Yeah, so, you know, I think you need your staff there to help you evaluate, and you got to get the people working together. You know, you want to see how Wendell Carter Jr., you want to see how Lauren Markkanen is, you know, Zach LaVine, how is he going to fit? You know, at the point guard situation, what are you going to do? You know, and we're just a couple of days away from the NBA draft lottery. So, you know, this could be a franchise altering, you know, draw the lotto. If they get a top 1, 2, or 3 pick.
Oh, could you imagine? Could you imagine? First year of AK and they get a top 3 pick. And he just holds the card up smiling and everyone's happy. Oh, how great would that be?
But, yeah, I mean, you know, I just don't want them to see them get seventh again.
No, don't put that evil in my head, even though it's probably true.
I went to Tankathon, and I kid you not, I did 20 choices, and 19 of the 20 were either pick 7 or pick 8.
okay, Tankathon's just doing that to mess with us.
Tankathon just is like...
They're trying to reverse Jinx.
And speaking of I figured you would appreciate this more than most.
Oh, boy.
I got my new pair of shoes in yesterday. And they are Simpsons shoes.
Very nice. So very, very nice.
Yeah, Vans Shoes did a like a collaboration with Simpsons. And so there was like a, I don't know, maybe six different styles. So I got the slip-ons that have like the, all the townspeople all over the shoe. So that was a, they did another one where it had like the drawings of the, like the original Tracy Ullman Simpsons.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's some, cool. There's some Bart Simpson ones, some Lisa Simpson ones, which I liked Bart. The, I liked the Lisa one, except they were like, I don't know, like a light purple, like a pastel color purple. And I'm like, I don't know if I can pull that off. And I don't know if I can pull off purple shoes. Maybe if they were like a neon purple or a dark purple, but that like pastel purple, I just, I can't do that one.
I don't think I've ever worn purple shoes before.
I
don't think I have.
I had some Magic Johnson shoes when I was a kid.
Oh, cool.
And they had, they were white, gold, and purple. So those were cool. And so yeah, I was a big Magic Johnson fan as a kid. And it's funny, there's a picture of me from, I don't know, maybe 19, and I was at the famed punk rock club CBGB's on a road trip with some friends, and I'm wearing camouflage pants, a windbreaker with a Magic Johnson like Lakers jersey on under it, and everyone's just like, bro, you are like the least matching guy ever.
Ha!
I look at the picture now and I'm like, holy cow. Like, there is not a single matching thing at all in my outfit at all, in the least.
You know, I'm not the biggest style person either, so I can't really judge.
Yeah, my philosophy is camouflage matches everything.
God, you're one of those guys that just goes down by the creek and just sits there and watches for birds, binoculars, and you'll lay on the army crawl on the grass to try to hunt squirrels.
I'm going birding.
Going birding.
You know, we've also got some more big news. Is the Blackhawks finally beat the Golden Knights.
Correction,
something.
Corey Crawford beat the Golden Knights.
Yeah, so...
Did you see the charts after? The data from that game?
It was... why did there were there so many shots on goal in a game that didn't go into... it didn't go into extra periods? Like, why were there that many shots on goal... And I liked that the three stars of the game were Corey Crawford, Corey Crawford, and Corey Crawford.
It, I mean, that's what you needed. That's what they needed.
He was phenomenal. I mean, honestly, we've talked about how against Edmonton in the first several games of the series against against Vegas, there's been ups and there's been downs, but this game was... might have been Corey Crawford's best performance.
Well, it's hard to argue. He faced what, like 48 shots, made 49 saves. I think if you looked at the actual shot attempts by the Golden Knights, it was almost 100.
It was unreal how many shots that the Vegas team was able to get off. It's just... the defense was not very good that day, and Corey Crawford stepped up and just looked fantastic.
You know what stinks about the whole thing? Look, it's so obvious. The Golden Knights are a light years better team than the Blackhawks. Like, it's not even close. And yet, the Blackhawks have been in every game, and it just that one puck that rattled off the crossbar in Game 2 was a little lower, it could be a 2-2 series. I think at the end of the day, the Golden Knights win the series, but if you're 2-2, you feel like you still have a chance to steal this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Is that shot that just went off the bar, you know, and there's been a lot of shots from the Blackhawks that have gone off the bar. And it's this, you're right. It could have absolutely been a 2-2 series. You know, but even more likely is this could have been over by now had Corey Crawford been only 99% good instead of 100% good. You know, Vegas dominated that first game. But you know, the Blackhawks lost a close one in games 2 and 3, but, I mean, although they've been outplayed by a much better team, the Blackhawks have found a way to stay competitive score wise in this series.
Yeah, you got to give them credit. Even if they're getting really outplayed, they stay in these games. They've made them interesting to watch. You could easily look at the way the teams play and think, oh man, they got to be losing like 5-1, 6-2 every night. But no, I mean, game 3, they lost by one goal. Again, they didn't play very well, but they still lost by one goal. What really haunts me about game 3, oh, did you see Patrick Kane just miss that wide open net?
There's been, you know, we need Kane to step up and be Kane. You know, Taves was absolutely dynamic and awesome in that first series against Edmonton. It's been okay in this series. But we need some of the Blackhawks players to just really step up. You know, this series isn't over. It's pretty close to over, but you know, you look at from a few years ago, that series against Detroit, where they were down 3-0 and came back and won it. And it wasn't very pretty, but they won that. And sure, this is a much different situation. The Vegas team, the Golden Knights, are a much better team this year than Detroit was that year. And the Blackhawks team that year was obviously better than the Blackhawks team this year. But, you know, that doesn't mean this Golden Knights team is, you know, the best team in the league. It's, you've got the chance. You know, this very easily could be, with a little more puck luck, a 3-1 series for the Blackhawks. So, you know, sure, you're right. Absolutely, the Blackhawks have been outplayed by a lot. But, you know, you don't get points for how well you play. You get points for winning.
Yeah. And look, it's very possible that Vegas can just shut the door in game 5. But, you know, the Blackhawks are going to try to give it all they can. And I'd love to see them at least go 6 games. It's almost impossible, not impossible, but almost impossible that they'll win the series. But I would just love to see it be as close of a series as we can get.
Yeah, I would love to see at least a one more win. If they lose,
I mean, think about
if they lose it in 6, you go, okay, you know, they put up a valiant fight.
Sure.
You know, they lose in 5, you go, but you lose in 6 and you feel like you were competitive. You know, the Vegas odds are in favor of Vegas winning this game in the next game.
As it will probably be for every game.
Yeah. But it's the late game tomorrow. So,
which I hate,
'cause that means I'm going to lose sleep. And you know, and it's one thing if they win, but oh my God, this game. I hate this guy.
Who?
Miller.
What'd he do now?
Hit another homer.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
least it was a solo shot this time. But, I mean, it's a 9:30 start. I don't like staying up that late to watch hockey. I mean, it's one thing if you're just staying up, putzing around, but, you know, like, I want to wind my evening down at midnight, not have my heart racing.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I like the Blackhawks team with these young players. I like the fight that they've had. I like the experience they're getting. There's a lot of things they need to clean up. The PK and the power play need to improve, but you know, I like the direction that they're pointed, and it would have been nice for them to be able to put this together earlier in the season where maybe they, oh my God, back to back.
I turned it off.
I'm turning it off too. This is
screw this.
This is hot garbage. But it would have been nice for them to have a better seeding and to face an opponent that they're more closely matched with, to see where they could go. Because, you know, maybe if they would have had an easier opponent in this round, they could have, you know, potentially gained confidence, gained a little more experience, and been a better opponent to Vegas. But I don't know. We'll go from there.
Yeah, we'll see. Either way, I'm just happy that they were in the playoffs and we got to see some playoff wins. And if you would have said that back in March, I would have said you're nuts. But, you know, whatever. Hey, I will. I'll take that. It's been fun to at least watch hockey again because I've missed hockey and I miss the Blackhawks. And, you know, it's one of those things where I don't look back with any regrets about winning that first series. It's like, well, you could have gotten the pick. There's no guarantee you would have gotten that pick. There really isn't. And I'd rather they try to go for it than try to lose in this situation. If you have a shot at making a playoff run, you take the shot.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, the hoping for the pick is more of a finding a silver lining. I mean, nobody wants their team to lose. It was more of a finding a silver lining. You were like, okay, you know what? Hey, if they win and beat Edmonton, awesome. Then they're actually in the Stanley Cup playoffs and you get more hockey before the season's over. But if they lose, then they've got a real good chance of getting the number one overall pick, which is good too. So it was kind of just setting yourself up for a win no matter what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's...
but last I want to talk a little Bears before we sign off, is we finally have padded practices. We're less than a month away from the very first game of the season, which is crazy to think about. But we have our first padded practices, and we also have an announcement that the Bears will not have fans at their home games.
Yeah, I'm kind of not surprised. And I'm kind of glad they're making that announcement now before the season starts. It's not like, hey, happy season. We're not going to be doing it now. Just kidding. Kind of glad they're taking care of that now.
Yeah, get that out of the way. We've got a month to figure this out, you know, what they'll put in the stands. But, you know, the Bears had, you know, finally got padded practices. The quarterback competition is underway. And honestly, I thought I was going to be in the position of wanting to, because obviously I can't go to the training camps because they're closed. But I was, you know, I thought I would be monitoring the beat writers every day, who had the better week, or the better practice, who did this, who did that, to try to you know, see, especially without any preseason games, who might win this competition between Mitch Trubisky and Nick Foles. And I'm kind of at the point now where, like, I don't care. just wake me up when the season starts and tell me who's going to be the starter. I'm more interested in some of the other training camp, battles.
Yeah, that will be the big focus. Will be on the quarterback battle, obviously. I think I heard something today where Mitch was like, well, he hoped he had a few throws back, yada, yada. The one clip we saw was him throwing a Jimmy Graham, but Matt Nagy was like, oh, nothing really stood out. It's like, well, you kind of want it to stand out. I feel like though Mitch Trubisky has the better chance of being the starter just because of, you know, where he's at and who he is. But I feel like if he doesn't overly impress, then that just opens the door for Nick Foles. But honestly, again, it's very early. It's very early. It's very, very early.
I mean, I have way more confidence in Nick Foles coming off the bench and being a better player as a, you know, coming in that way than I do if it happens the other way around and Nick Foles wins the job and maybe doesn't perform or gets injured and then you have to bring in Trubisky. I feel like we've already seen Nick Foles, I mean, I don't feel it, I know it. We've already seen Nick Foles do this, come off of the bench as the backup and play phenomenally well. And even be Super Bowl MVP doing that. We don't know what Mitch Trubisky can do as that role. So that's kind of what leans me to, hey, we have less padded practices. We have no preseason games. And, you know, Mitch Trubisky has got to be the one you're leaning towards starting and make Nick Foles beat him to get that spot. Because, you know, Nick Foles can come off of that bench and has the personality that he's able to do it. There's a lot of guys that kind of crumble if they're not given that starter spot, especially at quarterback. So it's, you know, Nick Foles has the temperament and personality to be able to do it. You know, he's got the skill set to do it. It gives him more time to learn this offense, which he should have a lot of familiarity with, but actually, you know, just some of the, you know, the actual plays versus the terminology and things. I feel like it's, you're probably leaning towards Mitch Trubisky being your starter at this point.
I think the chances are better that he's a starter, but I still think he's going to have to do more than just show the bare minimum.
Pun intended.
Ha ha. Ha ha. Ha ha.
But we've got some other training camp battles. You know, the starting cornerback opposite of Kyle Fuller. You know, you've got your second round pick. You've got Artie Burns, you signed as a free agent, who was just a first round pick a couple years ago from the Steelers. You've got your safety battle opposite of Eddie Jackson between Gibson and Bush. So you've got some other training camp battles that are going to be exciting to watch. And then you've got Cordarrelle Patterson, who instead of being moved with the tight ends or moved with the wide receivers, he's with the running backs.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of interested to see how he does this because, look, Cordarrelle Patterson has a very high football IQ. He's very, very fast, very, very athletic. I think they really got to utilize him in different scenarios. I mean, obviously you keep him in the special teams, but I'm very interested to see how he does with the running backs because, you know, he's not a big ground pound guy. He's a guy with speed, so he's obviously not like a Jordan Howard type, but I'm very intrigued. Very intrigued. I think he needs to be involved in the offense more in general.
Absolutely. That's a definite. Cordarrelle Patterson, I thought he was so underutilized last year. And it boggled my mind that they couldn't find a role for him, especially in a team that really struggled. You know, he's a big man. So like he's 6'2", 220. So he's a big man and he's fast. I mean, he is absolutely a barn burner. So I'm like, why wouldn't they have at least tried him out with the tight ends? I know at wide receiver, historically, he's had some tracking some of the deep balls and had some dropsies, but, we saw him have good success as running back with the New England Patriots when he was there. So, you know, that's a definite possibility with him having breakaway speed. He's a big enough guy where if you try to arm tackle him or trip him up a little bit, you know, we see it on kick returns that he can totally break those. And if you give him a hole, there are not a whole lot of guys that are going to catch him. He's got home run speed. You know, that's one thing that they lack with David Montgomery, who I like a lot. He's a guy that breaks, you know, he'll deliver big hits. He'll break tackles.
Bounces off guys.
Bounce off guys, but he is not going to take it to the house.
Right.
Cordarrelle Patterson will take it to the house. And
we've seen him do it plenty of times on special teams.
And here's the cool part is, you know, if you get a smaller defensive back that, you know, if it's one-on-one, they better want to bring a hit because Cordarrelle Patterson is going to do something, you know. He's a big man. So I like that they're going to utilize him more. And I hope that he gets a lot more touches because I think he's a very good football player and this team needs more playmakers.
They do. They really, really do.
And this offense wasn't nearly good enough to have a guy that talented just sitting on the bench waiting for kick returns.
No, look, I mean, you need, like you said, you need more playmakers. We need more playmaking from Tariq Cohen. We need Cordarrelle Patterson utilized by the coach more. We need to get Anthony Miller going consistently more. I know our quarterback situation is not great, but those three right there can make you go from a terrible offense to one that's not as terrible, that actually might be semi-respectable. Either way, it would help.
Yeah, so David Montgomery had a tough sled last year because that offensive line didn't play very well.
No, and they did not block for him.
You brought in Bill Lazor, who I know a lot of people just beat up as being a terrible offensive coordinator. But here's the thing. He's offensive coordinator in title. But honestly, what he is the offensive or the running game coordinator. Is Matt Nagy is the head coach / offensive coordinator. He's calling the plays. Is Bill Lazor is helping set up the offensive game plan for the week, and he's going to be trying to make the offensive the running game better. And he's a guy that has had success with his teams have had success running the football. So, you hope with a new offensive line coach and a new offensive coordinator in name that's going to put a different emphasis on how they do the running game. And you had troubles after Allen Robinson with, you know, stabilizing your wide receivers. I feel like you're going to have a better set of receivers this year. Tight end was a disaster last year, and
to say the least,
you obviously feel better about your tight end situation, even if Jimmy Graham's 200 years old. He's easily better than anybody you had last year.
Yeah, and Cole Kmet, too. You add him to the mix. You get a veteran tight end that could at least maybe be a good mentor for your young tight end. And if Jimmy Graham just kind of does the bare minimum, I think that's okay. Like better than that, but...
Even if he's just like a possession like guy where, you know, he's able to get some separation and catch some first downs... Like, you're like, okay, that's so much better than what we had last year. And you know, you've had the luxury of going back and watching how you misused Tariq Cohen last year. And he's a guy that has special ability to be able to make big things happen. And you didn't give him opportunities. So, you know, you want to see him, and you want to see Cordarrelle Patterson get more design plays and not just gadget plays, because if it's a gadget play, what happens is you get these guys like, oh, Cordarrelle Patterson's back there. Like, what's the gadget play for him? And then you gear up for him. Is you want to see them in there enough where it's not a, it doesn't draw the attention, you know? It would be nice to see a Cordarrelle Patterson do some halfback type things where, you know, you could hand it off to him, or he could go out for, you know, in the flat for to make a catch, because that would be, you know, if you have a dump off pass to Cordarrelle Patterson, you're like, man, one-on-one with that linebacker, that could be a big play right there.
Burst of speed.
Yeah. You want to see them have more playmakers get the ball. And that's going to be, the quarterback's going to have to be better, whoever that is. And the offensive line's going to need to be better. And the coaching, you know, Matt Nagy's play calling needs to be better as well.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like as bad as the offense is, and even if your quarterbacks aren't going to be great, there's still a lot of untapped potential in the offense with the guys you have around it. That's kind of the frustrating part, is if you had a good quarterback, imagine what this offense can do with a guy like Allen Robinson, with a guy like Anthony Miller, with a guy like Cordarrelle Patterson, with a guy like David Montgomery. But you have to use your weapons as best as you can to try to make things happen.
You know, the funny thing is even if Mitch wins this, game one is against the Lions, I believe. And he's, in his career, he's really shined against the Detroit Lions. And, you know, it's going to be funny. He comes in there, if he starts, does a really good job, looks great. And then you're just going to be like, okay, was that the Lion effect, or was that him figuring things out? And then you're going to go to game two and be like, I don't know what I'm going to expect from Mitchell Trubisky here.
Yeah, exactly.
Because especially, you know, game two is Giants. That's another team that was bad last year. They could be bad again this year.
I don't expect too much from the Giants, even though they always play us well, even though they're not very good. You got to go out. You got to beat those teams you got to beat.
You know, and it's even game three against the Falcons. You don't know what you're going to get from them. They probably offensively good, but what are they going to be defensively? Then you hit this, you know, this string of tough defenses, and that's where, you know, you're going to learn real quick who Mitch Trubisky is. You're going to hit the Colts and the Bucks and the Panthers and the Rams and the Saints, and the Titans and the Vikings and the Packers, before you get to the Lions again. So, you know, we could have an oasis there at early on where we're like, oh, maybe Mitch looks good. Maybe Mitch is all right. And then hit a brick wall quick.
Yeah, it's a very possible. Very possible.
Well, is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
No, I've said my piece. I'm going to continue to be frustrated about the Cubs. So,
yeah, just don't turn this game on.
I'm not. I don't want to. I already turned it off.
So. All right. Well, I'm gonna say this is we're gonna sign off here. Please, however you listen to podcasts, please hit subscribe. So that's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, TuneIn app, Google Play, Spotify. We're on them all. Follow us on social media at ShyFanPat1, at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com. Share this podcast with your friends. That's how we grow the show. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win.
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her, you can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van. And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the planes.
Bears, 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...